Okay, good morning. I'm very honored to have the opportunity to speak at this conference, so thank you very much for the invitation. Also, thank you very much for the introduction. I'd like to talk to you today about a research field that is becoming increasingly popular in the optical sciences, named plasmonics, and I'm of course going to explain in much detail what plasmons and plasmonics is. And I hope to show and convince you in this presentation that plasmonics will enable science and technology at the nanoscale, optics at the true nanoscale. And I'm going to do that by showing you results from my own research group in Amsterdam, all results from the past year or year and a half or 2 years or so. And that's why I've listed here on the first slide my students and PhD students and postdocs that have contributed to the data that I'm going to show you. I also want to acknowledge my fellow group leader, Cobus Kuipers, with whom I have collaborated very much. An ongoing, long-standing collaboration with a group of Harry Atwater at Caltech, and my colleagues at the University of Utrecht and the Institute of Optics in Madrid, Alphonse van Bladeren, Ruud Schrop, and Javier Garcia de Bajo. So what are plasmons, or what is plasmonics? In fact, plasmonics and plasmons are very old. These are well-known images of church windows and these very old Ligurian vases that had beautiful colors. And even though the artists at that time, the glass artists, maybe didn't know exactly what the nature and the physical origin of these colors were, they made these by mixing small amounts of copper, silver, gold in these glasses. And then it is the surface plasmons in these metallic nanoparticles that, of course, give these glasses their beautiful colors. So I'm going to explain in more detail what these surface plasmons, these particle plasmons are. And that's going to be about the first half, or a little more than the first half of my talk. And then I'll address another type of plasmons. These are surface plasmon polaritons. These are propagating waves, or solutions of Maxwell's equations, that propagate at the interface between a metal and a dielectric. So I'm going to focus on localized plasmons that are confined in metallic nanostructures, and then move on to propagating surface plasmons that actually have dispersion and many other interesting properties. Okay, first to the particle plasmons. The optics is extremely simple. We have a very large density of free electrons in these metal nanoparticles. If an electromagnetic field comes by, we get oscillations of these free electrons, and we get resonances. And the resonance condition is determined by the dielectric constant of the metal and the dielectric constant of the dielectric that surrounds it. And we have this very simple equation that describes the polarizability of these particles. And what makes the optics of these very small metal nanoparticle plasmons so interesting is that the polarizabilities are very, very large, just because of this giant number of free electrons in these metal nanostructures. So polarizability scales with R cubed. And here's a resonance condition, and as you can see, there's epsilon of the dielectric and epsilon of the metal there, and epsilon of metal can become negative, so there's a condition where this can actually go to zero, and the polarizability would become infinite. Of course, that's not the case, because as damping, epsilons are always imaginary, but here we have a resonance condition. And here's an example, is the field intensity around the 20 nanometer diameter gold particle, excited at 550 nanometer. But these dipolar oscillations in the metal nanoparticles can generate very high electromagnetic fields just at the surface of these metal nanoparticles. And the fields can be easily enhanced by a factor 10 or 100 in these single metal nanoparticles. We can tune these resonances in a very simple way just by, for example, varying the size of these particles. This previous calculation, that model I showed you, was just for a dipolar quasi-static approximation. If particles get bigger, we get dynamic depolarization, so there's phase lag across the diameter of the particle, and that can result in shifts of these resonances. And these colors here, these are dark field scattering images of colloidal gold particles with slightly varying size. And so you've seen similar pictures for quantum dots, where we can know we vary the bandgap by varying size. Well, here, in a different way, but also, again, it's a very strong optical effect, we see we can tune resonances, scattering resonances in this case, by carefully engineering on the nanoscale the size of these particles. And when you engineer size and resonance, you also engineer the field enhanced material calculations of integrated field enhancement around metal nanoparticles, with sizes going from 10 to 500 nanometers in diameter. And we can span the wavelength range from 500 to 700 nanometer. And by engineering the refractive index around these particles, we can go further into the near infrared. We can move on to more complex structures. These are metal shells, where we could have a dielectric silica core surrounded by a metallic shell of a thickness of, say, 10 nanometer. And then the plasmons can propagate or can be confined in these thin metal shells. We can interaction between plasmons across those shells. And as a result, the plasmon resonance is very sensitive to the thickness of those shells. And there have been very different groups that have worked in this area, in particular Naomi Hallas, Zia, and Van Bladeren's group, and worked on the engineering and fabrication of these metallic shells. And here are the calculations of the optical resonances, where we can see by very small changes in the thickness of those shells, the resonances again go further into the near infrared, here to 1,000 nanometer. Here's a transmission electron microscopy image of such metal nanoparticle shells that we have fabricated. So this is all wet chemistry. You grow your colloidal particles by a Stoeber wet chemical reaction, and then you chemically attach the thin metal shells to them. So this again shows that by careful engineering the nanoscale shape of the object and the thickness of these films, you can engineer plasmon resonances. These metal shells have interesting cavity resonances. That's particular about the shells. You can couple light into them. Light gets confined, and depending on the thickness of the shell, light gets confined. And here's a ring down calculation of an optical mode confined in the shell. Here the Q is 35, but if we make the metal shell a little thicker, Qs can become larger. Of course, it's more difficult to couple light into these cavities. But the mode volume in these cavities is extremely small. In this particular case that we have fabricated was 0.2 wavelengths cubed. And as a result, the Purcell factor, so that is the factor that determines how much spontaneous emission can be enhanced in these nanostructures, is as high as 54. Another degree of tunability we have is shape. So far I've talked about bulk metallic particles or bulk or shell particles that were spherical in shape. If we make these particle geometries anisotropic, we get longitudinal and transverse optical modes, where the longitudinal mode will shift to the infrared and the transverse to the blue part of the spectrum. These sharply structured geometries can have very high field intensities here at the sharp tip. And this is very important, of course, for spontaneous emission enhancement, indicated very schematically here. If we have an optical emitter, a quantum dot or a dye, and it's placed close to that metallic nanoparticle, it will induce a giant dipole moment in this particle that in turn will generate an electric field at the position of the dipole, and the dissipation rate of the dipole is the product of the dipole moment and the local electric field. So by engineering the local electric fields around these metallic plasmon particles, we can increase and enhance the spontaneous emission rate of optical emitters significantly. Here's an example of an originally spherical colloidal shell particle that we have tuned the shape of by an iron irradiation technique that we developed, by which we can continuously vary the aspect ratio of these metallic shell particles and thereby shift the resonances. What is important about these anisotropic particles is that you also can play with the dark modes in these plasmonic structures. We can have dipolar modes that couple to radiation in the far field, but we also generate quadrupole modes, higher order modes that are dampened. They don't couple to far field radiation in most cases. And for spherical particles, the spectra of these dipolar, the emitting modes, and these dark higher order modes are in the same spectral range. But if we change the particle shape, we can get a situation where the radiative dipolar modes are spectrally separated from the higher order dark modes, and thereby we can have very efficient spontaneous emission enhancement, for example, and also very efficient radiation from these anisotropically shaped particles. So what can we do then with these anisotropically shaped particles? Here we have shown that, for example, we can make quantum dot silicon quantum dot light-emitting diodes that we cover with a thin layer of anisotropic silver nanoparticles. And then by coupling these quantum dots to these nanoparticles, we can pull out the radiation with an enhanced rate. And this is very important for CMOS-compatible light sources, where we know silicon is an inefficient light emitter. Silicon quantum dots can have very high quantum efficiency, but the emission rates are very low. Well, if we can couple these particles to plasmons, we can significantly enhance their emission rate, and that's what we have done with these light-emitting diodes here. We've done the same thing with erbium ions. Erbium, of course, important for telecom applications at 1.5 micron, further in the infrared. But by tuning the shape of these metal nanostructures here, we were able to shift the resonance all the way up to 1.5 micron and enhance the emission rate of these erbium ions. And with these anisotropically shaped particles, we also change the polarization of the light comes out. So ideally, you can think of an optical emitter that is a very broadband, maybe homogeneously broadened light source. By coupling to these surface plasmons, you can squeeze the light into a narrower spectral band and also control its polarization. Here's a more complex geometry where we've put together metal, different metal nanoparticles with different diameters. This is a geometry first proposed by Stockmann. This is only a 40 nanometer diameter a gold particle, and calculations show that if we arrange them with other particles with gradually decreasing size, we can have a very large field enhancement up to a factor of 1,000 or 10,000 between the two smallest particles. So these bigger particles act as a sort of antenna that in the end focuses the electromagnetic field in this small, in this nanoscale gap here. Now these dimensions, these are very interesting, but are of course impossible to make with standard electron beam lithography techniques. And we have recently demonstrated a DNA templating technique by which you can make these extremely small plasmonic nanostructures. Here we've taken a single strand of DNA and functionalized it to a gold bead, and then similarly a complementary strand of DNA, and they will go together and form this nanostructure where the length of the DNA that we carefully choose determines the distance between the two metal nanoparticles that self-assemble in this way. Or alternatively, we have fabricated this structure where the two metal nanoparticles are both on the same side of the double-stranded DNA here, and we were able to form this structure of an 18 nanometer gold particle attached to an 8 and a 5 nanometer particle. And in electron microscopy, you see that the structure looks indeed as we had programmed it to be. And this is very interesting for biomolecule sensing because you could functionalize any biomolecule that you'd like to detect on a well-defined section here at the DNA so that it's exactly focused in the hotspot, in the plasmonic hotspot in these nanostructures. So I've shown you many different ways to tune resonances in these metallic nanostructures just by engineering shape, engineering the materials composition, engineering thickness and dimensions. And I've already mentioned to you several applications where we employ the fact that we can tune the resonance all the way from 400 nanometers up to far into the infrared. I've shown you the SARS application, the sensing application. Raman scattering in these very highly concentrated plasmonic fields is, of course, very sensitive. Medical diagnostics is something that's coming up with these shell particles, and here the group of Naomi Halas and Rice really has been pioneering, where you can functionalize and incorporate these shell particles in the body and then tune the resonance in such a way that you can illuminate them through the skin at wavelengths for which the skin is transparent and then heat them up for some medical both diagnosis and therapy. I've mentioned to you we can make LEDs more efficient. Their emission can become more directional. They become polarized by coupling surface plasmons to these LEDs. I've shown you nanocavities that confine light in extremely small volumes. And I should say, you may think plasmons, well, these are metals. Aren't they lossy? Don't we have a problem of damping in these particles? And in fact, yes, of course, that is the case, in particular for very small particles. But the damping is an effect that scales with the volume of the particle, and radiation scales with volume squared. So if we make the particles big enough, say 100 nanometer diameter or so, radiation will always win, and we actually get a very high efficiency of the light that's initially confined in these plasmons into radiation into the far field again. Here's a calculation of the albedo as a function of sphere diameter for a gold particle, where this is the fraction of light that is, after initial absorption, eventually scattered out. And you can see it's getting close to 1 here for diameters larger than 100 nanometer. A final application of these particle plasmons is in photovoltaics, and I want to spend a little more time on that because I think it's going to be a very important application. Here's a schematic cross-section of a thin-film amorphous silicon solar cell. The thickness of the amorphous silicon is a micron or so. And typically, the infrared light at 700 or 800 nanometer is not fully absorbed in the layer because it's simply too thin. If we cover the amorphous silicon layer with an array of metal nanoparticles, they will absorb the light. We will generate surface plasmons. And then they will radiate out, and they will preferentially radiate out into waveguide modes of this amorphous silicon semiconductor here. And here is a preliminary experiment that we have just carried out. This is the photo response, the photo current of this solar cell geometry as a function of wavelength, where we can see if we put these silver particles on top, the spectral response in the infrared is indeed enhanced. So the light that would normally go straight through the cell is basically folded by the surface plasmons into these waveguide modes. And it is because the scattering goes preferentially into those modes that exist. These are the waveguide modes in this high-index amorphous silicon layer. Here's a finite difference time domain calculation. Here we basically solve Maxwell's equations for a plane wave that comes in onto a cylindrical particle in this case, and it scatters light preferentially in that plane wave of the semiconductor. And here again, shape is extremely important. If we would do a calculation for a dipole that would be placed just above the silicon active layer, that would scatter 95% of its light into the semiconductor. That's indicated here. But if we take a 150-nanometer sphere, a rather thick sphere, and put that on top of the particle, we've lifted the dipole effectively away from the semiconductor layer. The coupling, the near field coupling into that semiconductor layer is becoming much less efficient, and only 40% or 50% of the light couples into the semiconductor. And by carefully engineering the diameter or the shape going from hemispheres to cylinders, it becomes possible to carefully to engineer and to enhance the coupling of the light from these metal nanoparticles in the solar cells. And I'm convinced this is going to be a very important application of plasmons in thin film photovoltaics. I then want to move on to a little more complex geometry where we look at an array of different metal nanoparticles. And here, of course, the interesting physics is that these dipoles will couple. Here we have 75-nanometer silver particles made by electron beam lithography. We have 10 of them here in a particle array. And if we excite one dipole, of course, it will do as a dipole in the other particle, so they all couple and interfere. And then if light comes in from the left-hand side and propagates along the array, there's, of course, a phase difference, so we have to worry about retardation effects. Not all these particles are excited in phase along the array. And this geometry is very similar to what you know from your radio wave antennas, where also light comes in and is generating dipoles that can constructively interfere here at the active element of your radio antenna or television antenna. I'm going to show you the same thing can happen, but now at the nanoscale, in these plasmon array antennas. Here's the experiment that we carried out. Light comes in from the light-hand side onto our metal nanoparticle array, 10 silver nanoparticles. And we look with a confocal microscope from the top, and we scan it along the array, where the light is sitting on the array. So we have a CW light source coming in, exciting all these particles, and all these particles will interact. And if we look, if we set our detector here at 600 nanometers, light is coming in from the left-hand side, we see most of the light is sitting here on the first particle. So all these particles are excited, but they interfere constructively and destructively, and the net effect is that all the optical energy is sitting here on the first particle. We tune the frequency to 700 nanometer, and in fact here we're crossing the plasmon resonance frequency, light is now mostly sitting on the last particle. So here we see we have concentrated light at a true nanoscale. Just by tuning our frequency knob on our light source, we're able to get control over the localization of optical energy, making it either sit here at the front of the antenna and the end of the antenna. And I should say the length scale here is about 1.5 micron for the total antenna length. The dimensions here are, of course, determined just by the diffraction limit in our optical system. But we know from modeling that, in fact, the optical energy is all concentrated in the first 10 nanometer close to that first particle. So we have true nanoscale confinement of light on these nano antennas. Well, here we had a continuous wave light source propagating along the array. What would happen if we just excite one dipole and then let it propagate, let it couple to its neighbor, and that will onward couple to its next neighbor? Then we have a dipole wave that propagates along the metal nanoparticle array, and we can attribute the spatial frequency to that dipole wave. So we have a k-vector. And this would be a way to transport optical energy in a well-controlled way at a particular frequency. We know the wave vector, so we have a dispersion equation. And the quasi-static dispersion equation for these particle arrays is drawn here, and here's the light line. So this is dispersion in the dielectric that is around the metal nanoparticle array. And there's some pioneering work here. Quinton first proposed this, and also Mark Bromasma, and Weber and Ford and Citrin have done modeling on these structures. And we've recently found out that the quasi-static approximation that describes this dispersion here is too simple to fully describe the behavior of this plasmon wave. And here's the exact dispersion equation. Now, taking into account the fact that there is retardation along these particle arrays, there's ohmic damping, there's radiation into the far field, and we see an avoided crossing occurring here, that we have this upper branch here above the light line, and we have a line and dispersion branch here below the light line. Yeah. Now, here above the light line, we can, of course, couple to radiation, so these plasmon modes are extremely lossy. But below the light line, we have a very interesting mode here that's much less lossy. I've plotted here a real part of the frequency as a function of the k vector. Here is the imaginary part. This is the damping as a function of k vector. Again, here we see very overdamped oscillations above the light line. But for these lower k modes here, we have very low absorption, or very low, I should say. The propagation length is in the order of 5 to 10 micron. And that, in this nanoscale optics, is a long propagation length. So the challenge is now to demonstrate we can actually propagate these plasmon waves and experimentally see that we can propagate them a long length of 5 to 10 micron. And that experiment still is yet to be done. We can test whether the dispersion equation is right, though, by doing a scattering experiment. So here we take a planar array of metal nanoparticles. We come in with light, and we measure the transmission. And we vary the angle of the incoming light. And if we vary the angle, we vary the k vector. And if we match the k vector of the incoming light with that of a propagating plasmon at that frequency, we will see that in transmission, then light will be extinct and coupled to the array. And here is such a measurement. It's a rather complex graph. I'll show it to you in detail. Here we've varied the angle of incidence on the particle array. And then at every angle of incidence, we measure a spectrum of extinction. And here, blue means we have high extinction, so light is actually coupled to the particle array. So we can measure at every angle or every wave vector what the frequency is at which we couple to a plasmon mode in these particle arrays. And we have two types of modes. We have the transverse and we have the longitudinal modes. And the data points here, the dots here, are the measurements that were derived from these previous extinction measurements, where we have now determined experimentally the transverse and the longitudinal plasmon coupling mode along the particle arrays. Here's the quasi-static calculation. Here's the dynamic calculation. It's not quite overlapping the measurements, but there is a range in the extinction dips here. And this experiment then demonstrates that truly these dynamic effects, so take into account retardation, ohmic damping, scattering into the far field into account to understand the dispersion. And the reason that here, this branch here, that we could not get experimentally has so low loss is that in the far field, all radiation components destructively interfere and there's no radiation loss. The fact that dynamic calculations or descriptions are important and much more than quasi-static also tells us that in any circuit design, any complex plasmonic nanostructure, you have to worry about these phase lags, these retardation effects, and the coupling of radiation to the far field. And so that means these dynamic effects are important for circuit theory, even at length scales as small as lambda over 5. By reciprocity, the opposite, or the coupling of metal nanoparticles to emitters also implies that if we have an optical emitter, a quantum dot, close to a metal nanoparticle array, it excites these dipoles in all these particles that will then interfere and in the far field radiate, and that we get directional emission from the quantum dots, or dyes, or whatever light source you want to do. Or if you want to make a single light emitter, single photon emitter, you would place it close to such a metal nanoparticle array, the single photons would come out just in one direction, depending on the frequency. So below the plasma frequency, this optical emitter would irradiate in this direction, and above the plasma frequency, the emitter will emit in the other direction. And we've done some preliminary experiments where we've made metal nanoparticle arrays and covered them with an Otto 532 dye. We excite one metal nanoparticle, and then we scan our confocal microscope to see where the radiation is going. And indeed, we see that if light is focused on this side of the array, it is beamed in to the left-hand direction. If we excite it on the other part of the array, the light is beamed in the other direction. These are preliminary data. We need to do much more experiments to look at this in more detail. So far I've talked about localized plasmons, particle plasmons, coupled particle plasmons. Now I want to move on to the second part of my talk, which is surface plasmon polaritons. These are electromagnetic waves. They're just simple solutions of Maxwell's equations for the bound mode that propagates along the interface between the metal and the dielectric. So here's the metal, here's the dielectric. This is the electric field intensity distribution. So the field in the metal is very much confined to the interface, and in the dielectric, it's sticking out a little further. It can propagate along, and it's called a surface plasmon polariton because it's a coupling of an optical wave that propagates and the electrons, the free electrons in the metal that couple with the wave. Again, we can write the dispersion equation for this surface plasmon polariton, very simple equation, and the wave vector depends, of course, on frequency and the dielectric constants. And here, again, we see a resonance condition appear. If the dielectric constant of the metal equals minus epsilon of the dielectric, we have a resonance, we have extremely high K vectors. And this is a calculated dispersion equation. Here's energy, here's wave vector. Here's the light line. This is a dispersion in a regular dielectric, say in air. And if we go closer and closer to the plasmon resonance, we can expect much larger K vectors for the surface plasmon polariton. So if there were no losses, this would go to infinity. We have extremely large K vectors, which means extremely short wavelength. And that makes these surface plasmon polaritons so interesting, because we can do optics at optical frequencies and still have very small wavelength. Now, there is damping, so in the end, that limits how far we can go with these K vectors here, and this is also part of experiments. How can you engineer surface plasmons that have a good figure of merit where you can have very small wavelength and still not too high a damping? But ideally, what you would like to do is you sit at a fixed frequency here, you come with your helium neon laser, you generate the surface plasmon polariton with that light. The frequency of that surface plasmon polariton is, of course, equal to that of your helium neon laser, but the wavelength may be as short as 60 nanometer. So you shrink the wavelength by a factor of 10, and that enables you to do optics at extremely small length scales. So the question is, this is all theory, and this one doesn't even include the losses. Can we show these effects experimentally? Well, again, we have to engineer dispersion. Here is dispersion for some particular geometries that we have studied experimentally. Here's a cylinder. This is a metal cylinder embedded in a dielectric. And here, if this cylinder is on the order of the thickness of the skin depth, the plasmons will couple all across the perimeter of the cylinder. And your dispersion of the cylinder is going to deviate very strongly from that of the planar surface. Or here's an MIM structure, a metal insulator metal structure. These are basically two metal plates with a dielectric in between. If we space them by only 50 nanometer, we can significantly enhance the wave vector compared to that of the planar surface plasmon. And the thinner we make this gap here, and the more we confine the light, the larger the K vector is going to be. What can you do with this? Well, first of all, if the wavelengths are so small, we can do optics at extremely small length scales. So we can think about all integrated optics where we have components where wavelengths are on the order of 100 nanometer or maybe 50 nanometer that we can make very small. Also, this is essentially two-dimensional optics. So by engineering the metal surface, for example, the thickness of the surface, we can in plane engineer the dispersion, and we could make lenses, optical components, just in the plane by engineering the dispersion. We can get negative diffraction for particular choices of MIM structures. In the plane, we can get negative diffraction, again, by the clever dispersion engineering. And here's a very special case. Here we have a taper. If this metal taper is about 20 nanometers thick, a plasmon will propagate at the surface, and another plasmon can propagate at the bottom, and these two will couple. And you will have anti-symmetric and symmetric modes, and these modes can propagate all the way to the taper end. And as we get closer and closer to the taper tip, and the metal film gets thinner and thinner, the wavelengths get shorter and shorter. So the electromagnetic field is oscillating at a fixed frequency, but the wavelength is getting shorter and shorter. In fact, the group velocity is also going down, and we should be able to concentrate light at this taper tip. I'll show you an experiment that actually demonstrates this, that we have done, and it was inspired by a calculation by Stockmann, who has shown for these conical tapers that light could propagate and get confined to these very sharp tips, and then the local field would be enhanced very close to that tip. And the experiment we did was the following. These are not conical taper tips, but are getting as close as we could get. This is a thin metal film. It's a gold film on aluminum oxide. Thickness is 100 nanometer, and it's tapered down, as you can see here, to a very sharp tip. Apex diameter is 60 nanometer. And now we generate surface plasmon polaritons by irradiating with a 1.5 micron laser this whole array that is integrated in the metal film. And the coupling conditions are made so that we generate a surface plasmon at the bottom of this taper, so at the interface of this taper and the dielectric substrate. The substrate has been doped with erbium ions all through the plane here near the surface. And so we can now use a scanning confocal microscope to detect the fluorescence from the erbium ions that will probe where the surface plasmon polariton is going as it propagates into this tip. And here's the result. Here's an optical image of the taper tip again. Here the plasmon is generated. This is fluorescence from the erbium ions that are excited at 1.5 micron. We detect the upconversion at 600 nanometer, by the way, so that helps in the resolution of these measurements. But what you can see is the plasmon propagates, it reflects off these edges, we get interference effects, and it propagates all the way to this point here. And if we do the same experiment, we couple in from the light, plasmon propagates at the bottom interface here, but we look at it from the top rather than from the bottom, as indicated here, then we get this image. So we don't see the plasmon because the metal taper is on top, except here near the point where the plasmon is already feeling the very the interaction between the bottom and the top plasmons causes them to fold around that taper tip and focus themselves all the way toward the tip. And by carefully engineering and measuring the size here, we can demonstrate that the light is guided and concentrated to a length scale of lambda over 8. So we have a 1500 nanometer wavelength. It's concentrated here to a lateral dimension of only 200 nanometer. Smaller, we couldn't detect with our optical technique, so we've done, again, finite difference time domain calculations. And we confirm that as the light propagates into this taper tip, here's a top view, it gets confined more and more in this taper. There's a little bit of reflection, that's what you see in the interference here. And if we zoom on this spot here, we can see that the light is actually confirmed into a spot with a diameter of 92 nanometer. So we have a 1500 nanometer photon squeezed into a volume with a diameter of only 90 nanometer here. And that volume is very much determined by the sharpness of the tip. Remember, the diameter here was 60 nanometer. So if we could make sharper tips, light could be concentrated even further. So the way this works is that we have, this is in cross-section, so here we have our optical waveguide, our plasmon waveguide, and there's one particular mode, it's the asymmetric mode, where we have like charges around the cross-section here, so the electric field is pointing up here and pointing down there, and it's that asymmetric mode that as the taper gets narrower and narrower, gets confined more and more as you get towards the taper tip. And that confinement can be described by an effective index, so as the waveguide width gets narrower and narrower, the optical mode that is first mostly concentrated in the substrate, where it was excited, gets more and more cylindrically symmetric, focusing around that small taper. And then below 100 nanometer, below 50 nanometer, the index suddenly goes up. We have the wavelengths get shorter, and the confinement goes up very sharply. The second geometry I would like to demonstrate to you is the MIM waveguides, metal insulator metal, where we have, again, enhanced strong dispersion, much higher K-vectors, and so the K-vector is defined here as this mode that propagates between these metal plates. The lateral confinement is 50 nanometer, and we can determine the dispersion of these waveguide modes by doing experiments using near-field microscopy. Here's the geometry that we looked at. This is not so easy to see. This is a cross-section SEM of a silicon nitride membrane. It's 40 nanometers, 50 nanometers thick. It was evaporated with a thick layer of silver on the bottom here, and also with a 35 nanometer thick, so a rather thin layer of silver on the top. So we have silicon nitride embedded into two silicon silver films. And then schematically, you can see the experiment here. With a near field tip, we generate surface plasmons here at the buried dielectric. This surface plasmon MIM mode will propagate toward a slit that was made by focused IMB milling here in the back silver layer. And in addition, the near field tip will also excite surface plasmons that propagate at the surface here. So we have two modes, and they, of course, have different dispersion that will interact. And we can see that when we scan our near field tip across that slit where we couple out the light, as the tip is moving, we see these oscillation periods. Here you see a line scan. You see clear oscillations. And these are described by the difference in wave vector of the MIM mode and the air mode. And by these kind of measurements, we're able to reconstruct the dispersion diagram for these MIM surface plasmons. So here's the light line in air. This is the dispersion in air. This is the dispersion in the silicon nitride. And we see we can have significantly enhanced the K vector for these MIM modes. Now, there is a special kind of MIM modes that can show negative diffraction. If we choose the thickness of the dielectric well, and also its refractive index, there is particular cases, there's a narrow range of fabrication where you can actually make it, where you not only have a positive branch in the dispersion diagram, but also a negative branch in the dispersion diagram. And so this is a range where the phase velocity is propagating in the opposite direction as where the intensity in the field is dying out. So we have a negative refractive index. And the challenge is to experimentally demonstrate this. I should say the figure of merit for this particular calculation was not so good. There's extremely high losses plotted here. So this is the imaginary part of the wave vector. There's a regime here where we can have negative k, where the imaginary part of the wave vector can go down. And the challenge is to find, and we have recently found, experimental conditions of thickness and refractive index where the figure of merit can be as high as 10. Here's a finite different time domain calculation that shows you the concept of this negative refraction. Here's the MIM section. So this is silicon nitride embedded in silver on both sides. Here's again silicon nitride, and I'll show you in a moment how light will penetrate through this slot here and then move into this MIM section. So in color is plotted the phase of the light. It's coming in. It is squeezing itself through this MIM waveguide. And here you can clearly see the phase of the light is propagating in a backward direction than the light itself. Experimentally, this has been demonstrated recently by Harry Edwards' group. And I think with these simulations and dispersion calculations, we now also understand what the dispersive nature of these negative MIM modes is. In the last minutes of my talk, I want to show you an entirely new technique that I think is very important in this plasmonics research, and it has to do with electron beam excitation. The technique we use is cathodoluminescence, a well-known technique developed in the 1970s, where an electron beam comes in and you detect the radiation that comes off your sample. Well, an electron beam is a very interesting source of surface plasmons. It's basically a single particle, generates an image dipole, image charge, you have a dipole that suddenly recombines. It couples to the available modes, and one of these modes is the surface plasmon polariton. So an electron beam basically is a nanoscale, a point source, a broadband point source of surface plasmon polaritons. And so this is a different kind of doing optics, different way of doing optics, because we don't have any detection resolution, spatial resolution in the detection, but we have very high spatial resolution in the source of the surface plasmons. Detection we do with this parabolic mirror that is placed above our sample that guides the light that's coming off the sample into a spectrometer. And we've done the following experiment. Here we have a grating that we have made in a single crystal gold surface, and we put our electron beam on the surface and it will generate surface plasmon polaritons. They will propagate along the surface, and if they meet this grating, they will scatter out and they can be detected and spectrally analyzed. If we scan our electron beam away from the grating and we detect the light that comes out that is detected with the parabolic mirror, this is the result. So if the electron beam is close to the mirror, this distance zero here, we have some radiation coming out. If we move the electron beam away, we see these oscillations of the emission from our sample. And what we're probing here is the plasmonic local density of states. This experiment is very similar to that of Drexhage in the 1970s, who put a dipole close to a mirror and saw that the radiative lifetime of that dipole is very much dependent on the distance from the mirror because the atom interferes with itself. Similarly, we see here that plasmon interferes with itself, interferes with its source here, and these are these oscillations, and we basically see the two-dimensional density of states of the plasmons printed here in our measurement. This is done at 750 nanometer. We can do these measurements at all different wavelengths. So here again is position. We scan the electron beam, and at every wavelength, we can detect the radiation that comes out, and we see these characteristic oscillations with longer periods for longer wavelength. There's many more details to explain about these graphs, but just in general, I want to show you there's a theory that we can also do, and overall, we see many of the features that we see in experiment also very well represented in the theory. Finally, I'll show you that we can also look at localized or confined, I should say, surface plasmon polariton modes in nanocavities that we made in gold surfaces. Here are rings made in single crystal gold using focused ion beam milling with different diameters. If we scan the electron beam along those rings and we detect the radiation spectrum, this is what we get. This is the radiation spectrum averaged over these rings. As we increase the diameter of the ring, the spectra will shift to the infrared, higher order modes will come in, and they're very well represented by a boundary element method of the theory that predicts the same shifts of these resonances. So basically, these are MS0, we have radial modes, we have azimuthal modes with dipolar, quadrupolar character in these cavities that we excite and that we spectrally detect in our cathodoluminescence experiment. So this is a very interesting way of confinement, because this is all metal. Plasmon is confined at the surface, and plasmon propagates at the surface and goes into this ring and then is reflected off. And here we can see the field pattern as that plasmon penetrates this ring structure. We make these metallic nanostructures, as I mentioned, using a focused ion beam technology. Here you can see in situ how an ion beam is etching away gold ions from a single crystal gold surface, and thereby making this nanostructure on which we do plasmonic experiments. And we have recently integrated in our focused ion beam system also a cathode luminescence technique, so that we can in situ with focused ion beam make a nanostructure, irradiate it with electrons, and detect the photons that come out, so that we can in situ engineer the resonances of our metallic nanostructures. So with that, I would like to conclude. I've shown you that we can do plasmonics in many different ways, and they lead to optics at the true nanoscale. I've very briefly introduced you the concept of particle plasmons. The resonances can be tuned by varying the diameter. We can change the anisotropy, we can change the shape, we can make these shell particles and get further control over these plasmons. This was the photovoltaics. We couple light into particle plasmons that then selectively couple into the waveguiding modes of the solar cells and enhance the infrared response. We went on with DNA self-assembly to make extremely small metal nanostructures that may find applications in biosensing. I showed you these metal nano antennas that can confine light at a true nanoscale. Then we had plasmon tapers that concentrated the 1500 nanometer wavelength light into a hotspot as small as 90 nanometer and can be made smaller if we can make sharper tips. I showed you MIM modes that interfere and can have negative diffraction. I showed you cathode luminescence as a new technique to generate surface plasmons on surfaces and also localized plasmons in these plasmon cavities. And with that, I'd like to end and thank you for your attention.